Hello, welcome to the Dope Science Show with Stephanie Lowe, a.k.a. Science Steph with Steph. Thank you for your ears and minds. I hope that the show sparks new ideas, new opportunities, and conversations. I want us to learn and grow. We are all curious, innovative, and experimental in our daily lives. We are all dope scientists.
Hey guys, it's Steph, a.k.a. Science Steph with Steph from the Dope Science Show. And I've got another episode. You know, I'm here. Sorry, it's like I have to ramble and just shake off all this like nervous energy before I can get into the show. How are you guys doing? How have you been? Just so much has been going on. But this episode is really inspired by death. And death is kind of... it's real but abstract for me. I haven't had anyone extremely close to me that I love deep in my heart die. There have been close moments, but no one's ever died. And that was me knocking on wood. And I'm grateful that the people are still in my lives. And I should call them and appreciate them more. And I've never been to a funeral, but I've seen a dead body before. Someone I grew up with, but I didn't feel close, but I found their body when I was a kid. And when I say kid, I mean like I think eighth grade. And I remember seeing her on the ground and just looking at her, and I was like, she's just laying there, she's not moving. And I knew she was dead, like, right away. It was weird, because it was like I knew she wasn't sleeping. I think maybe it was the way she was laying. You know, I haven't really thought about this in a long time, actually. It must have been the way she was laying. It's just like, why would you be laying like that on the ground? And I remember I picked her up, tried to put her in a seating position, and she looked peacefully asleep. So I did touch and see a dead body. And I just kind of felt like in shock. I went to you guys are like, what the heck? But there's a point to this. I went to a death museum in LA. I never wanted to go to a death museum. Not on my bucket list. But I went to this death museum in LA on Melrose, and it was life-changing. I remember just feeling overwhelmed with like grief. Yeah, I felt grief. And I looked at everything, and I think I cried at a couple times. And I was horrified, sickened. And I was super kind of observing other people too, like their reactions to it. And it was a true museum where they show different aspects of death, as far as like ceremonial practices, as far as execution, serial killers, suicide, accidents, genocide, just everything you can imagine about death. Yeah. But I'm not afraid to die. Nope, I'm not afraid to die. I mean, it's gonna happen. It's gonna happen to all of us. And last week, I was reading this article, which I'm going to share with you guys, and it was about pigs. The brains of pigs.
Beginning of article. Scientists restore some functions in a pig's brain hours after death. This article was published on ScienceDaily.com, dated April 17th, 2019. The source? Yale University. Here's the summary. circulation and cellular activity were restored in a pig's brain 4 hours after its death. A finding that challenges long-held assumptions about the timing and irreversible nature of the cessation of some brain functions after death. The brain of a post-mortem pig obtained from a meatpacking plant was isolated and circulated with a specially designed chemical solution. Many basic cellular functions, once thought to cease seconds or minutes after oxygen and blood flow cease, were observed, the scientists report. The intact brain of a large mammal retains a previously underappreciated capacity for restoration of circulation and certain molecular and cellular activities multiple hours after circulatory arrest. However, researchers also stressed that the treated brain lacked any recognizable global electrical signals associated with normal brain function. At no point did we observe the kind of organized electrical activity associated with perception, awareness, or consciousness. Clinically defined, this is not a living brain, but it is a cellularly active brain. Cellular death within the brain is usually considered to be a swift and irreversible process. And cut off from oxygen and a blood supply, the brain's electrical activity and signs of awareness disappear within seconds, while energy stores are depleted within minutes. Current understanding maintains that a cascade of injury and death molecules are then activated, leading to widespread irreversible degeneration, decay. However, researchers in Seston's lab, whose research focuses on brain development and evolution, observed that the small tissue samples they worked with routinely showed signs of cellular viability even when the tissue was harvested multiple hours post-mortem or after death. Intrigued, they obtained the brains of pigs processed for food production to study how widespread this post-mortem viability might be in the intact brain. 4 hours after the pig's death, they connected the vasculature of the brain to circulate a uniquely formulated solution they developed to preserve brain tissue, utilizing a system they call BrainX. They found neural cell integrity was preserved and certain neuronal, glial, and vascular cellular functionality was restored. The new system can help solve a vexing problem: the inability to apply certain techniques to study the structure and function of the intact large mammalian brain. Previously, we've only been able to study cells in the large mammalian brain under static or largely two-dimensional conditions, utilizing small tissue samples outside of their native environment. For the first time, we were able to investigate the large brain in three dimensions, which increases our ability to study complex cellular interactions and connectivity. While the advance has no immediate clinical application, the new research platform may one day be able to help doctors find ways to help salvage brain function in stroke patients, or test the effects of novel therapies targeting cellular recovery after injury, the authors say. This research was primarily funded by the National Institutes of Health's Brain Initiative. This line of research holds hope for advancing understanding and treatment of brain disorders and could lead to a whole new way of studying the postmortem human brain. The researchers said that it's unclear whether this approach can be applied to a recently deceased human brain. The chemical solution used lacks many of the components natively found in human blood, such as the immune system and other blood cells, which makes the experimental system significantly different from normal living conditions. However, the researchers stressed any further study involving human tissue or possible revival of global electrical activity and postmortem animal tissue should be done under strict ethical oversight. Restoration of consciousness was never a goal of this research. However, the researchers were prepared to intervene with the use of anesthetics and temperature reduction to stop organized global electrical activity if it were to emerge. Everyone agreed in advance that experiments involving revived global activity couldn't go further without clear ethical standards and institutional oversight mechanisms. To use tools developed by the Brain Initiative to unravel mysteries of brain injuries and disease, said Christine Grady, chief of the Department of Bioethics at the National Institute of Health Clinical Center. It is our duty to work with researchers to thoughtfully and proactively navigate any potential ethical issues they may encounter as they open new frontiers in brain science, she said. End of article.
I thought immediately, zombie brain. Zombie, we have zombies. Frankenstein, we have Frankenstein. But they did note that there was none of the normal electrical activity that you would see in a brain that was conscious and, you know, having thought. So it wasn't like they brought consciousness back, but the body was back. But the thing is, they didn't know what was going to happen. They didn't know if they were going to bring back consciousness. They didn't know if electrical, you know, activity would happen. So that's why they had the backup plan. The fact that they didn't know and it was that close to happening, to me, I'm like, that's freaking crazy, you guys. I know I'm supposed to be scientific, but I love speculating, so just ride me, you know? And, you know, I always had a fear that zombies were going to come, that we were really going to have zombies in our lifetime. Don't laugh, or do laugh, because you know what I mean. We grew up, I'm an 80s baby, you know, so I grew up watching zombies and Night of the Living Dead, Day of the Dead, and just mad scientists working to bring back zombies in some shape or form. I loved Frankenstein, the stories, and I always thought maybe science could possibly do it. You never know. You never know. And that's why it was so scary. It was so scary because I always thought it could possibly happen. But now as an adult, you know, it doesn't make sense, right? Okay, so we bring back a dead body and it's a zombie, right? It's not going to go down like in the movies, because in the movies, this condition is contagious. And in no way is anything about what bringing back a dead person a contagious condition, because it's like extraordinary. They have to like flush its circular system with this special solution called Brain-X. So yeah, that's not contagious. So we really couldn't have the zombie hordes that the movies depict. Unless, of course, it was a virus or something. But then I don't know. I need to talk to someone about like, how could a zombie like apocalypse happen? Is that even in any scenario possible? Virus sounds like the most likely thing. I think I've heard of animals and different insects maybe that have been turned into a zombie type of scenario via a parasite, you know, that type of thing. So, very interesting. I'm rambling. So, I'm going to read this article, you guys, about zombie life. Just kidding. About zombie life. It's an article about the bioethics of a brain that's been dead for 4 hours. Crazy. All right, let's get into the article. The article I'm reading was published on sciencedaily.com. The title, Pig Experiment Raises Ethical Questions Around Brain Damage. Bioethicists point to repercussions and balance between saving lives and saving organs. The article is dated April 18th, 2019. The source, Case Western Reserve University. In a groundbreaking experiment published in this week's issue of Nature, neuroscientists created an artificial circulation system that successfully restored some functions and structures in donated pig brains, up to 4 hours after the pigs were butchered at a USDA food processing facility. Though there was no evidence of restored consciousness, the assumptions have always been that after a couple of minutes of anoxia, or no oxygen, the brain is dead. The system used by the researchers begs the question, how long should we try to save people? In the pig experiment, researchers used an artificial perfusant, a type of cell-free artificial blood, which helped brain cells maintain their structure and some functions. Resuscitative efforts in humans like CPR are also designed to get oxygen to the brain and stave off brain damage. After a period of time, if a person doesn't respond to resuscitative efforts, emergency medical teams declare them dead. The acceptable duration of resuscitative efforts is somewhat uncertain. It varies by country, emergency medical team, and hospital. Promising results from the pig experiment further muddy the waters about the when to stop life-saving efforts. At some point, emergency teams must make a critical switch from trying to save a patient to trying to save organs. In Europe, when emergency teams stop resuscitation efforts, they declare a patient dead and then restart the resuscitation effort to circulate blood to the organs so that they can preserve them for transplantation. The switch can involve extreme means. In the commentary, the authors of the study describe how some organ recovery teams use a balloon to physically cut off blood circulation to the brain after declaring a person dead, in order to prepare the organs for transplantation. The pig experiment implies that sophisticated efforts to perfuse the brain might maintain brain cells. If technologies like those used in the pig experiment could be adapted for humans, which the study authors say is a long way off, some people who today are typically declared legally dead after a catastrophic loss of oxygen could tomorrow become candidates for brain resuscitation instead of organ donation. One of the authors of the study said, "As we get better at resuscitating the brain, we need to decide when we are going to save a patient and when we are going to declare them dead, and save five or more who might benefit from an organ." Because brain resuscitation strategies are in their infancy and will surely trigger additional efforts, the scientific and ethics community needs to begin discussions now, says the authors of the study. This study is likely to raise a lot of public concerns. We hope to get ahead of the hype and offer an early reasoned response to this scientific advance. Both authors of the study praise the experiment as a major scientific advancement that is overwhelmingly positive. It raises the tantalizing possibility that the grave risk of brain damage caused by a lack of oxygen could in some cases be reversible. Pig brains are similar in many ways to human brains, which makes this study so compelling, said one of the authors of the study. We urge policymakers to think proactively about what this line of research might mean for ongoing debates around organ donation and end-of-life care. End of article. Hey, you guys, this is a two-part episode. To be or not to be? That is the question. Whether 'tis nobler in the mind to suffer the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune, or to take arms against a sea of troubles and by opposing end them,
to die, to sleep no more. And by asleep to say we end the heartache and the thousand natural shocks that flesh is heir to. 'Tis a consummation devoutly to be wished, to die, to sleep. To sleep, perchance, the dream. Aye, there's the rub. For in that sleep of death, what dreams may come. When we have shuffled off this mortal coil, must give us pause. There's the respect that makes calamity of so long life. For who would bear the whips and scorns of time, the oppressor's wrong, the proud man's contumely, the pains of despised love, the law's delay, the insolence of office, and the spurns that patient merit of the unworthy takes, when he himself might as quite as make with a bare bodkin? Who were Fordell's bear to grunt and sweat under a weary life, but that the dread of something after death, the undiscovered country, from whose bourne no traveler returns, puzzles the will, and makes us rather bear those ills we have, than fly to others that we know not of? Thus conscience does make cowards of us all, and thus the native hue of resolution is sickled over with the pale cast of thought, and enterprises of great pitch and moment, with disregard, the currents turn awry, and lose the name of action.
Thank you guys for listening. I recently read the passage from Hamlet, To Be or Not to Be? That is the question. And that was the first time that I really understood what that meant. And what he is talking about is, you know, life is so hard, right? Life is so hard. Why do we persist in living when we can just as easily kill ourselves? And then he says, we persist in living because we don't know what's on the other side of death. You know? Death is the unknown. And because we're afraid of the unknown, we persist in living even when we're in our darkest times of our life. So for some reason, I find that very powerful, and I identify with that idea and realization because I live like that. Whenever I feel down or I have had thoughts of death when I was paralyzed with my multiple sclerosis, I kept thinking, I don't think I can do this, like live in pain like this, you know? But it's like, this is life. This is life. This is what I know. And I don't know what death is like. And we're all going to die. So what's the rush? Like, I honestly think there's no rush. We're all going to die. We don't know when we're going to die. It'll happen when it happens. And it just happens. That's the unknown. You know? So that's pretty much how I view death. I see it as a natural progression of life that we all will experience at some point. And it's emotional, but at the same time, inevitable. And why rush it? It'll come when it comes. So I know that was a heavy topic, some heavy topics. And I'm curious, what are your thoughts on death? That's a wide open question. And I'm just curious to see what you guys have to say. So thank you for listening. Talk to you soon. Peace.